I think you're molting.
I might be.
You're turning into a beautiful butterfly.
Welcome, everybody, to the You Dime Bad Podcast. I am Tyler, joined tonight by Megan Bard.
Hello.
And Kevin Meacham.
What's up?
And Russ Steinberg.
Russ Steinberg.
That's right. And tonight's podcast is brought to you by Arrest the Murderers of Breonna Taylor. No, we're not doing that? All right. Well,
no, I mean, they should be arrested.
Yeah, they should go to jail. And big congrats to Peter Bard, who's not joining us because he had a babby.
Yeah.
King George.
The most perfect baby in the history of babies.
At least top, I don't know, seven. How many babies does a Dimebag have at this
There's
point?
There's a lot of babies.
There's
in
a lot
in a Dimebag.
Yeah, we have several. Multiplied dramatically since a Dimebag launched.
Carefree, and now there's babies everywhere.
You know, it happens. So big news. I don't know if you guys heard, but UConn's in the Big East now.
No
officially.
Shit.
It happened.
Officially in the Big East.
Officially official.
We're on the website and everything.
The Mr. So Hotball's 400-day countdown is finally over.
Shout Hotballs.
Hotballs. I don't know. Is there anything about the day itself that you guys particularly enjoyed?
As someone who has covered the Big East on the SB Nation side for a while, like going to the Big East tournament every year and stuff, I really enjoyed that UConn fans now know who John Fanta is and know of like his just everything about him that makes him so great.
He is
oh my god
man.
Peter,
you gotta be kidding me.
What
are you
kidding me?
Peter Bard is joining us from the hospital room. Hi.
Yo.
Peter.
Hey guys.
Oh my god,
should we speak quietly?
We were just talking about your perfect baby.
I can't stay super long, but
wait, why
put baby on the podcast?
Yeah, well, that's just saying.
Hi, Ray. Congratulations.
Hey. Hi, Ray.
Congratulations.
Congrats.
Everyone's saying congratulations. You can't hear because it's in my earphones.
Oh, my God. He's so beautiful. I love him so much.
Yeah, so is the baby, Megan.
Megan, if you click off of Russ's screen, you can see the rest of us, including the baby.
So how's it feel, dude? You're a dad now.
Pretty surreal still. So what were we talking about?
We were talking. Peter, what were your thoughts on the day UConn went back to the Big East? Were they, my child is arriving?
He didn't arrive until the next night was when that started. It was wild. So we got there late. It was really like super early yesterday morning. We got there about 1:00. And like they moved us around a bunch, and finally we got settled at like 3:00, and like nothing changed from then until like 7 p.m. And then we took a nap, and then they were like, "Oh, the baby's coming out now." And like from that, like that process took 6 minutes.
Baby is a champion. Wife is a champion.
Chill little sleepy dude.
Yeah, hanging out. Peter, before you go, is there anything about basketball that you want to talk about?
How are you emotionally dealing with UConn being back in the Big East?
I'm pretty stoked about it. It's the most important thing that's happened to me recently.
Right.
Yeah, same. No,
not really.
Which team are you most looking forward to UConn playing against whenever basketball happens again?
Well, I mean, I guess it's got to be one of the teams that was in the league originally with us. So one of St. John's, Seton Hall, Georgetown, and Villanova. I honestly feel like Georgetown.
I think my answer is Georgetown.
I think so, too.
I had such emotional feelings about Georgetown growing up.
God, I hated those Iverson teams. Like, man.
Yeah. Like, he was my most hated player.
Hated those teams.
See, that's
so
funny.
Much.
I hated Kittles more than Iverson at the time.
I hated Kittles, too.
I was a bad
hated Iverson. I hated Iverson because he was clearly better than Kittles. Like, everybody watching Kittles knew, like, he was a really good college player who would be a pretty good pro. But Iverson, like, I don't know. Everybody talked about, like, he was this generational talent. And in certain ways, he was. But also, nobody talked about the ways in which he was, like, fundamentally below average. Like, he's got to be one of the most inefficient players.
He is sort of in that, like, you know, Kobe-ish, like, era where, like, undeniably and uniquely talented, but in a way that ruined a lot of far less talented players. Yeah. Because they all tried to be Iverson, but none of them had the handle or the speed, and they were just bad because of it.
Monte Ellis.
Or, like, because of Kobe, like, a lot of really bad players who couldn't shoot taking 28 shots a game.
But also, like, you looked at the guys he played with at Georgia, like Othella Harrington, like how much worse his numbers got when Iverson got there and started taking 70% of the shots. I mean, how many times did he shoot below 40% in the NBA? But anyway, it's a cool team with some history. I'm looking forward to playing them. I would say Villanova, but I'm pretty sure they're going to kick our butts the first couple times.
Yeah, it's going to be so annoying.
We also just played them 3 years in a row.
It's going to be bad, though, because every time they do beat us in the first few years is going to be like, well, I thought UConn was going to be fine once they were back in the Big East. And it's going to be like just the most annoying Twitter day.
We were close to beating them last year. So.
Yeah, we should have won in their place.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's that far outside the realm of possibilities that we beat Villanova.
It's very possible that like we split with them.
Yeah.
If there were to be a season next year.
Which there won't be.
There will not be.
I'm also looking forward to shitting on Providence again.
Who?
Who? That's right.
You didn't notice that I specifically left them out?
I did. I noticed.
I did notice that you left them out, but I would like to call attention to the fact that Providence is trash and we are going to make them our bitch as soon as possible.
I very much enjoyed the list of the like most tournament wins since the year 2000 that had Providence and DePaul with the same number. That was
cool.
The best part about that list is that by starting in 2000, it cuts off six tournament wins for us that we had the year before.
Yeah.
And we still are in first by a considerable margin. Right.
That's right.
I'm kind of looking forward to playing Creighton.
I'm looking forward to going to Creighton because everybody talks about how crazy their place is.
It is. They seats like 17,000 and they sell it out every game.
I know what I'm getting with the old Big East teams, you know, like emotionally. I feel like Creighton is going to be the biggest change for me.
I feel like I'm also looking forward to, I'm very primed for the Xavier matchup because we just played them last year. It was such a great game and also their Twitter is delightful. So I'm like very amped and I'm like looking forward to having that rivalry because their fans are fun to talk shit with.
See, I actually think I'm going the opposite, which is their fans seem a little too comfortable with us. I feel like a tinge of anxiety because it is going to get so ugly so fast and they have no idea it's coming, but we do. So like I'm just watching our name. I'm seeing
when
Kevin
Xavier has to block me, it's going to be.
Yeah, I'm seeing our name pop up and like from like Xavier fans being like, you should follow a dime bat. I'm like, you should not.
Well, they're really going to be upset that you just called them Xavier. They get really pissed.
Oh,
about
I'm going to do that a lot too.
Like that's to them like all caps UConn is to Megan.
You want the X as your logo. I'm pronouncing the full X.
Xavier College.
Right.
I did really enjoy whoever on Reddit.
Oh, that should be a bit is we pretend that they are the X-Men. that it's the Charles Xavier School for the Gifted.
Kind of badass though.
That would be really fun.
We improved their school.
Yeah, it's better now.
I mean, Wolverine teaches art there, so.
Yeah.
I think like Peter, I'm looking forward to playing Georgetown the most, but one that I'm kind of interested in that's going to give us a bit of a different flavor than we got from them before is going to be Seton Hall. Because as a program, they're obviously in a much better place. And I know I mentioned this in the Slack the other day, but I think that's where you're going to get like the biggest recruiting battles between UConn and Seton Hall fighting over that New Jersey, New York territory, not necessarily UConn, Providence, and whatever the hell might be in New England.
Yeah.
Providence has been living off the guys that we chose not to take forever. Yeah. Like every key Providence player is a guy that we could have had and didn't recruit and regretted not recruiting. It's right. When have they ever beaten us straight up for a guy?
I feel like it happened exactly once, and it was a guy who ended up being...
It was awful.
Yeah, that I can't even remember.
Was it Makai Ashton Lankford?
Was it Chukwu?
Chukwu, who ended up transferring to Syracuse. Because, like, Ashton Lankford was going to UConn until we fired Ollie.
Yeah.
Right. That was until we fired...
Miller, right?
Miller. Yeah. Ooh. That was...
It looks like his judgment of coaches was just as good as his point guard abilities.
It turns out. The Seton Hall one's going to be tough because once, like, that's another one. Like, I'm not used to them being respectable yet. They were more or less a laughing stock my entire adolescence.
They had that one stretch when Amaker was there and they had one really good recruiting class and it didn't go that well. And then he left and went to Michigan.
Was that when they went to the Sweet 16, though, the year that they beat Duke?
With Andre Barrett and then.
Yeah, it was like 2000 or 2001.
I think it was. They had the number one recruit. They had Eddie Griffin. They had Barrett. Mm-hmm. They had Marcus Tony L. That was when Samuel Dallenberg was on that team.
Yeah.
Big remember some guys energy right here.
Yeah.
Grant Billmeyer, remember some guys.
I saw a ton of those Seton Hall teams play.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of Grant Billmeyer thoughts.
Yeah. My main Seton Hall memory
We're used to the best Seton
is...
Hall team being like a first round NCAA tournament.
Right. And my main Seton Hall memory is Danielle's 360, so.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then that time that Ray Allen ate Dan Hurley's lunch on senior night.
Yeah. That was on our retrocast list before we realized nobody watched the retrocast.
I still
think those were always for me anyway.
Yeah.
So what do you guys, who are the teams this year in the Big East you're most looking forward to? Not like most, overall the teams you're looking forward to playing, but like coming up this season, who are you excited to play against? Who are you excited to see? Who are you excited, are there any players you're interested in?
I'm actually really looking forward to having some women's basketball conference opponents that aren't absolute hot garbage. I was just talking about this with my parents. I had dinner with them tonight, and there was never, even when USF was supposed to be good, it was still not good. And getting to have two games with DePaul, which is always a real team, and Marquette's a come up, Villanova's a come up. These are teams that are going to be really good soon, and I think are actually going to take advantage of having UConn in their conference. Mm-hmm. Like, the AAC never gave a shit about women's basketball, and these are schools that care about women's basketball and don't have football and are why not? You've got this real opportunity. So I'm genuinely looking forward to seeing what happens when, UConn shows up at, Marquette for the first time. What happens when UConn's at DePaul or, Nova? How are those schools going to try and parlay that into something?
Well, that's, I think, a big part of it is I think this league, these schools are in a position to leverage UConn in their conference for good recruiting and improving their programs. Mm-hmm. Whereas what was, Tulsa ever going to do?
No.
Who were they going to get to go to the University of Tulsa? Well, you can get your brains beaten by UConn twice a year.
Yeah.
But if you're, St. John's women's basketball or Georgetown women's basketball, there's at least the possibility that you could, that's going to have some cachet to the people they're recruiting.
Yeah.
It seems
it's gonna be fun to see who goes to the games. Are there gonna be UConn fans that show up at the Dunk for the first and there will be.
The Dunking Donuts Center.
Yeah. That's right.
Does the women's team play at the Dunk?
I don't know.
They might when UConn comes.
Yeah, they might. They'd be dumb if they didn't.
They'd get a sellout.
It also seems like Marquette, if they haven't had success, at least their fans seem to take the sport seriously. I gotta say, it is kind of nice just being with a more sophisticated fan base in general.
Yeah.
I'm scared to tweet. I gotta get myself back in the game mode here.
Yeah, we're just not making fun of them for being dumb idiots and racists and sexist constantly.
All the years of calling Memphis stupid, it's I gotta recalibrate.
We have to come up with something that's less classist.
Yeah.
Honestly, I've been so impressed by how the other schools have trolled our return. They're all clever, and I'd forgotten what it was like to be in a conference with other teams that could, do clever trolling.
Except for Providence, who just constantly tweets at me that they want to fuck my mom.
Yeah, they're
That's constant in my mentions. Also, the Providence women's team plays at Alumni Hall, which seats 2,600 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's not going
to
work.
Move it to the Dunk, you cowards.
The Dunkin' Donut Center.
Honestly, if they play in a gym with 2,600 seats, if that's where they put UConn, like, that's fucking embarrassing.
Yeah, that's what Seton Hall does.
Just embarrassing.
Just move the Providence, UConn, Providence home games to Mohegan. Just get it over with. Yeah. It's inevitable.
I mean, you might as well move them to Gamble.
Fair.
The women should only ever have to play in Gamble.
Yeah.
Like home and away games.
That's what I'm saying.
I think it's hilarious how it like perfectly lined up the AAC contract at Mohegan, the Big East contract in Chicago, and us coming into the Big East all aligned at the same time, so that it's like, yeah, no, obviously we're going to have the Big East tournament at Mohegan now. Like, obviously.
It's a great event.
It is, and they do a nice job. I know DePaul's bummed they don't get to just like drive from their house to the tournament now, but there will be more people. So
DePaul knew what time it was when UConn came back into this conference.
Yeah.
Get used to not getting any of the trophies now. Sorry.
Doug Bruno had your trophies in 53 weeks.
How many consecutive conference games will the UConn women win in the Big East?
I guess it depends on when the sun explodes.
I think we'll lose some games.
Yeah but when?
We're not going 7 years without a loss.
I think they lose one this year.
What?
Conference? I do not.
This year.
Conference
I don't think there's
game?
A conference game this year.
Here's the thing.
Meech.
Super young team. If you're going to get them, it's going to be this year.
Meech.
Honey.
Sweetheart.
I mean, Gina was talking about this, and he was like, you don't win every single game unless you are way, way, way better than everybody else.
You don't
just do it by being the best. 20 conference games, going 20-0 is tough unless everybody sucks, and they don't all suck.
But I mean, DePaul's like, never gotten us, so I don't know. I think,
but you got to think eventually, you know,
over and over again.
Twice a year.
I just don't think they're going to get him this year. I don't think they're close.
Played DePaul
yet.
Three times.
It's going to take a Final Four caliber team, in my opinion, and I just don't know how fast.
They're not quite there yet.
Yeah, I don't know how fast other teams can get there. Yeah, I agree.
I think having UConn is something that will make that happen faster. Because Gino was talking about that too. Like now he's got a 20 game conference schedule, and it's harder to fit in the depth of a non conference schedule that he usually puts together. But also, you know, the flip side of that is several of those games will be like actual good games, and
he doesn't need to put together the same schedule.
I think it'll
he
be.
He was flat out lying on that interview.
Yeah, he
earlier
was.
This
I was
week.
Like, you did not put this schedule together like that. Like, this hard.
You
like,
played Hartford.
They played Tennessee every year when they could. You know, when they were still playing Tennessee, they still did play, but there wasn't the same number of you know real tough like away games. That just wasn't the same.
But wait, give me your actual number. How many games will they win in a row before they lose? I'm in triple digits. Is anyone else in triple digits?
No.
I think it's at least year three before anybody catches them.
I'm in year five.
Why is it year three, though, and not year one?
Because I think the gap is still pretty wide between UConn and the next best.
If they're not going to beat freshman Paige Buckets, they're not going to beat Paige Buckets. They're never beating Paige Buckets if they don't get her this year.
My thing, though, is that I think having UConn is going to enable them to get better players. So I think they have a chance to close the gap more with UConn in the conference. But I think it's just going to take a little while. I think the gap's still too big at the moment. But we'll see. It is hard to say because half the team is freshmen this year.
Yeah, that's my main point.
I say 116 games, including conference tournaments.
I say zero. They open up against DePaul and they lose
their conference opener.
Yeah.
We're all going to be clamoring to go back to the AAC.
Yeah.
But then they don't lose again the rest of the season and win the national championship.
What a stupid prediction.
Oh, yeah. It's dumber than 116 games.
Yeah, it is, Russ. Like, you say that as if they didn't just win, like, 140 straight conference games.
Could you even name the teams in the American right now?
I can name a few. I mean this sincere. How many are there? I could try.
11 now.
Like are 11?
There? I don't know.
Probably.
They should let Navy women's basketball play in the AAC.
Yeah.
They can't
would
be
anyone
any
notice?
The rest of the teams. Yeah.
None of them are any good. They're all bad.
Like, but some of them are like really bad.
Yeah,
like, some of them are like bottom 20, 30 in the country.
why do you even have a team bad?
Yeah.
Which like, one I could walk bad? On to that team bad.
You know what's funny, though? Like, I have, I think, two memorable AAC women's games. One was the first USF, I think. Maybe not the first, but I think it was the first after Stewie left, the championship game, when everyone was like, this is the one. This is going to be when USF gets them. I think that was when Lou hit 10 threes or something. Like, yeah. And you kind of just absolutely destroyed them. Like, that's my most memorable one. And then the second is that, like, weird, what was it, three-point win at Tulane or something Tulane. In the middle of it.
But they should have lost.
Yeah, they played terrible.
There's also that home game against Tulsa that they should have lost a couple years ago.
I don't remember this.
No Are recollection.
No,
I honestly don't ever remember the women playing Tulsa. I don't remember a single time.
Me either.
Maybe I'm making it up.
Me either.
No, I just remember after the game, Tulsa, Tulsa should have won.
I mean, he would have said that if they won by 30, so...
That's like a troll thing you
would
say. They
didn't win by two. They still won by double digits, obviously. But it was like a game until the fourth quarter.
Russ could be completely making this up. We would have no idea.
This is why all the Providence fans want to have sex with your mom.
So let's assume, which is a very brave assumption, that a full basketball season happens this year. What are your conference predictions for UConn, men and women? Where do you think the men will finish? Give me like a record prediction, assuming a full season. We'll obviously revisit this like 100 times, but
someone else go. I'm looking for the Tulsa game.
I'll say the men go 12-8 in the Big East and they finish fourth or fifth.
That sounds about right to me.
I think 14-6.
Hell yeah, that's dude.
That's really hard to do.
Yeah, well, I think they're good. I think that there's one team in that league more talented than we are next year.
I'm with Peter. I'm thinking top three finish there.
That's and we have a really good roster coming back.
They're really good, guys. I know we're used to like trying to keep our expectations low, but they're actually good this year.
And we have a coach.
Yeah. If I was more confident in the health of a Cook especially, but Polly too, I think I would be... you could get me there. I think I'm just hedging my bets a little bit because
the Akuk jumping up and down video the other day has me feeling pretty good.
Oh yeah. I watched Akuk jump into a pool like 25 times in a row, and that's where my mental state is right now. Like, that's just the thing I do now.
I feel like with Polly, if nothing else, his injury showed that our lineup might actually be better with him with Book Knight in it. So like, I don't think Polly is that critical as we might have thought. I mean, it'll be nice to have him. Don't get me wrong.
It is very hard to win without a shooter.
We'll see, I guess. I guess it's if Cole's a shooter or, you know.
I mean, Cole is a shooter. You know, Cole is definitely a shooter.
And I think after the way Hurley was talking about Gaffney, I think he's still real high on Gaffney. Like, he'll start at the beginning of the season. I think the starting job is his to lose at this point.
I agree.
So I think, you know, I think there's not as many minutes for Polly as there are for a Cook, because like there's so many question marks in the front court. But
Polly can play the four if needed.
And he can, yeah, totally. And I mean, that's going to be a fun lineup too. Like if he comes back and he can rebound like he did in the very last game he played of the season.
That was the most ridiculous game.
I know.
All of a sudden, Tyler Polly is beating people off the dribble, like. Then he exploded.
Grabbing rebounds. Yeah, no, I just, but yeah, I would like to know what's going on. But then you've got like Jackson in the mix, who's going to be like, everybody's talking about how great he's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, depending on how quickly the freshmen come around, like Sonogo could be a big X factor because he's such a dominant rebounder that you can afford to play a guy like Polly at the four, which opens up your offense so much.
Yeah, they definitely have the depth now, at least, to withstand both the injuries and then if it takes Cole a little while to shake the rust off or get used to the higher level of play. Like, it's nice to have that sort of depth now, which was not available to most of the end of the AAC teams.
And, like, a lot of versatility, too. Like, you look at these guys and they can play a bunch of different positions and they can form very different lineups depending on if you want to go small and fast, do you want to go bigger and stronger. Like, you have a lot of different lineup options depending on who you put on the floor.
I would very much love for Andre Jackson to be supremely good really quickly.
Oh, God. If he's like a dunk machine, I will weep tears of joy.
I need a dunk machine.
I'm incredibly confident in Book being like first team all conference level player.
Like, what if Jackson is like sticks level athletic dunk machine? Like, what if that's real?
I kind of think we know he is already. It's how well does that athleticism translate into game action? That's what. That's what I want.
Sticks, it didn't really. No. Much.
Nope. Yeah, he struggled for a long time.
Though I feel like Jackson's game is much more polished already than Sticks was when his game.
Yeah, he's just got much more game sense. He's a much better passer and ball handler.
Yeah. Although it'll depend, right? Like, can this team play fast enough to really make the most of Jackson? I don't know. They didn't really play that fast last year. You know, I think they can. I think they're capable of it. I think they have the ball handlers for it. But maybe this is just my bias from watching Andre Jackson dunk videos for the last 12 months. But like, the more they can get him in the open court, it feels like the more useful he'll be.
Like, that's my question, is who's going to be the next great on-ball defender at UConn? Who's the guy who's going to step up? Is it going to be Gaffney? Is it going to be Brendan Adams? Is it going to be Cole? Like, who's going to do it?
I would guess Gaffney.
That's my inclination.
I would, it depends if a Cook plays or not. I would bet Gaffney is the best defender on the team this year.
I can see that.
You could talk me into Adams. I'm just not convinced he'll play enough to really.
Well, if he's a top level defender, he'll play a lot.
I'm kind of hoping he doesn't play enough because Gaffney's significantly better than him, I guess, is where I'm at. The Gaffney ceiling is so much higher naturally. I hope he hits it. That's where I'm at.
I think if Brendan Adams is getting a lot of minutes, it means Gaffney's not playing as well as I think he could be playing.
Adams was low-key a awful shooter last year.
He was real streaky.
I think he. Yeah, I mean, what do you hit from three? Like 27% or something? Like you can't.
It's not like he hit 27. It's not like that's evenly distributed. Like sure. A guy like that just needs to be more consistent. If he can start consistently doing what he can do, like there were games where he was unconscious. If he can start doing that more often, he suddenly becomes a 37% shooter instead.
Right.
And now he's a huge asset.
Yeah, if he's at 37%, he should like. That's probably consideration for a starting job right there. If consistency means 31, 32%, like I'm not sure he can be valuable enough without consistently shooting. It would take Gaffney being worse than I expect to get that, to get Adams over him in that case.
Yeah, I hope he has a hoop in his year, so he's just taking like a million shots this summer and also like working on his handle, because that's the other thing about Adams is he's really good at getting fouled, and I would like to see him do more of that.
Yeah, generally getting to the line more would be nice.
Yeah. But like, it's so interesting. This is what we call a segue, that during the coach show that they just had, where they were talking about the players coming in, and like when Hurley talks about his players, it's like very specific, and he's not talking in these like, you know, cliches and generalities and like, you know, nonsense metaphors. They're like very specific. You know, these are their skills. These are their strengths. This is what they need to work on. And it's like, oh, that's what a coach sounds like.
I feel like you're alluding to some other previous coach, Megan.
I have no idea what you're talking about. No idea.
I missed the entire coach's show. What did Hurley say about some of these guys?
Russ.
Russ is laughing already. This is a bad sign.
Not about the incoming freshman, because he was very good about that. He talked for like 10 minutes about each individual player, and it was great. I was laughing at some of a fan asked both coaches about superstitions that they have, but we can get into that after Megan summarizes the boring stuff.
I mean, it's pretty much everything we've already heard, that, you know, he's got some really high hopes. And he did say Jackson is like, he's hype about Jackson.
I saw him call Jackson a 2-year player, and that got me hype.
Yeah.
He said 2 years at the most.
He's also said like book night. So don't get too attached to book night.
I don't think there was anything particularly exciting about what he said, but it was just very like, it was just nice to hear. But
he seemed very high on Sanogo.
He did. He was very high on Sanogo. Yeah. He did say something about Richie Springs being like, you know, he talked about the things he improved on and was like, and he's still got a lot to improve on. So I think Richie Springs is like still not ready for prime time yet. Even though he's been here for a year, I think he's still a work in progress. That was the impression that I got from that, but that he's like learned a lot and is, you know, is getting better. But I don't think you should expect to see a ton of Richie Springs minutes this year.
Fine.
And JBF's up to 7'1" now.
Keep stretching him out.
Yeah, he's going to be 8'6" by the time the season.
That's right. And the Bristol kids, they're listing him at 7'1" now. He's only
and he's 16.
Yeah.
Jesus.
7'1". And that kid does not move like a 7'1", 16-year-old. He's not all like coltish arms and legs, gangly, like can't, you know, control his extremities.
Did you know?
I can't wait to see
that by the time he's 32, he's on pace to be 14.
Russ, you're so jealous of like, people who grew.
This trajectory. I know. Yeah, when I was 15, I was I was 2 3/4 feet tall.
It's the Russ Steinberg math corner. It is going to get that back.
All right, Russ, give us the superstitions.
First, that Tulsa game.
No.
No. All right. No.
Okay, fine.
No one's seeking clarity.
Well, because I have the box score in front of me. That's okay.
Why do we still let him on these pods?
I don't know.
Where's Rosada?
A fan asked both coaches if they have any game day superstitions. Gino answered first. He said, I don't really have any superstitions. I just try to, you know, get away from the game for a little while if I can. There was one time we were playing in the field house and it snowed the day before, so I went sledding with my kids. You know, just anything to take my mind off of it. And that was the extent of the answer. And then the camera pans over to Dan Hurley.
Who's wearing like a witch doctor hat.
Basically, yeah.
He was plucking hairs from Gino's head to put in the cauldron.
Yes. Yes, he has the big bubbling cauldron in front of him, stirring it. No. He goes, superstitions, where do I begin? I got a few. One, M&Ms. I like M&Ms.
That's shocking on its own, by the way, but carry on.
Yeah, it's weird. When I get to the arena, I have a bunch of M&Ms, but I pick out any M&Ms that are the same color as the team we're playing that day. So if we're playing USF, and I think you meant UCF, he says, if we're playing USF, I pick out the yellows.
That could be USF, too.
Who knows?
The green would make more sense, but, you know, well, there's not a lot of logic
like
involved here. So.
Interchangeable directional Florida school.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So he says that, and then he goes, and if we lose or if we really don't play well, then that underwear, I'm never wearing that underwear again. Now, if we lose and we played well and maybe it went into overtime, then maybe you could convince me to wear it again. But usually if we lose, I'm never wearing that again.
Whose job is it to convince
him? It was like
him?
10 minutes of this.
Underwear and socks, like God.
And socks, yeah. And I really wish the entire time Hurley was talking, they just had the camera on Gino so that like, we could see how he was reacting to all of this.
But like, he kept going and going. Like, this is not, these are elaborate. These are elaborate superstitions.
You know, the real secret of UConn's $40 million budget deficit is that it all pays for Dan Hurley's underwear.
Hurley keeping the crematorium and the ag school open late to burn all his undergarments.
My question is, what happens to all the M&Ms in the wrong colors? Is someone else eating them? Are they just in a jar somewhere?
Moore's like, give me those fucking green M&Ms.
No, they go into the potion for the... I'm picturing like after a loss to, you know, like a home loss last year, like Hurley just walking out of Gamble buck naked, a giant fire behind him with all of his clothes in it.
Just underwear and socks bonfire. Just,
yeah.
Oh God. I love our weirdo coach.
God bless Andrea Hurley.
He's really weird.
I think one of you said it, although it might be in a, as yet to be published mailbag, but like he is as perfectly weird as the fan base. Like it is it's a match.
It's a highly high anxiety fan base for a highly anxious coach.
And like, maybe I'm just drawing this comparison because Bob Diaco was trash and I don't want to associate anything with him, but like Diaco was psychotic weird, whereas Hurley's like neurotic, and that seems to fit us a little bit more.
Yeah, well, to Megan's earlier point, like his ability to actually answer one question with a reasonable, like comprehensive and comprehensible answer helps. It's like watching the like Instagram series he did where he breaks down each game and you're like, okay, Thank you, because if all you heard was the part about burning your underwear, you'd start feeling a little, be a little concerned. But like when you're showing like, oh yeah, here's the game where the zone D really gave us trouble and we had to adjust by going to a more up-tempo offense in the second half. You're like, all right, burn your underwear. It's cool. Like we get it. It's cool.
Well, I do kind of want to go back and reread those because maybe like I just skipped over one where he goes, and we didn't adjust well to the zone because I forgot to pick out two of the blue M&Ms earlier in the day.
Oh, God. They were hard to read without any line breaks.
Yeah, man. Hard returns are your friend.
Could have been in there. You don't know.
Cool it on the ellipses. Maybe they're good luck. I don't know. I mean,
I did also think it was notable that they all, including David Benedict, were all wearing Black Lives Matter shirts. And someone who was like a sponsor, I didn't really catch what the connection was, but he came on to ask a question and like specifically asked them to address how they're teaching the kids how to, you know, be productive members of society and deal with, you know, racial injustice, blah, blah, blah. And like Gino explicitly said, like, we were teaching them to be activists. And I was like, hell yeah.
The kids are so good. They're teaching Gino's old ass.
They're so, hey man, Gino was at the BLM march in Manchester, fucking raising his fist. I love it. You'll love to see it, especially because, you know, these are young Black athletes and this is college. Like, they're supposed to be learning how to use their voice and find their power and all that shit. Like, this is what their jobs are. This is what they're supposed to be doing.
They're doing a good job, especially the women's team.
So good.
It doesn't hurt that they've got legitimate, like there's an example of what that looks like in women's basketball players, like people
there
like
sure
Moore and Gabby.
Yeah.
And many other players.
Renee.
Renee Montgomery. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, Maya like legitimately getting people out of prison. Like, unbelievable.
Maya's so fucking cool. She is the absolute best human being.
She's my hero.
I think that UConn's ever, you know, produced.
I'm dead serious. We need to put her name in the law school. Fuck it.
Her name needs to go on something.
We need to put Maya Moore's name on something important.
I feel like I should admit, when Maya Moore said she was stopping playing basketball to help get an innocent person out of prison, like, it felt quixotic. You know what I mean? Like, even I'm like, all right, well, you can raise money, you can bring awareness. Like cool, go nuts. But I was like, what is a professional basketball player really going to accomplish?
Yeah, that's the job for an NPR host of the podcast.
Right. I don't know, man. It's like, it's one of the more inspiring things of all time to me. Yeah, that like she was like, no, I'm going to go fucking do this. I'm going to get an innocent man out of prison. And then like 2 years later, the dude is out of prison. It's one of the more incredible things I've ever encountered in my life.
Honestly, the fact that this man was in jail at all is a travesty. There was no evidence against him to begin with. There was a very, very shaky, clearly, if not coerced, convinced,
manipulated,
very weak ID. And then this man who lived alone, they found a fingerprint that did not belong to the man who lived there and did not belong to the man who was freed. And they did not turn that evidence over to his defense, which is people should lose their license. That's an absolute travesty. He should not have had charges brought against him.
Look at any part of the criminal justice system for more than 5 minutes, you start realizing between, like, you know, the cash bail system and fucked up plea deals and overcharging and everything else, that there are probably hundreds if not thousands of other innocent people sitting behind bars right now. So be like Maya Moore, go do something.
We have nearly a quarter of the world's incarcerated population, and we are less than 5% of the world's population. So do the math.
Go be like Maya Moore.
Anyway,
sports.
There are a lot of people who just turned off this podcast.
Fuck them.
We don't need them.
All right, time for football.
Hello?
Oh, my goodness. He's back. David Benedict Cumberbatch, is that you?
It is. It is I. I've returned from a 3-month quarantine in Shropshire.
What? How many cases do you have there?
42, but 37 a sheep.
Oh. Does Shropshire have functioning federal leadership?
In a sense, we have a duke.
David, are you here to tell us about the new updated menu at J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut?
Of course I am. I'm here to tell you about the new hours due to the situation, and to tell you about the new menu. And of course, there are a limited number of options, and the place is closed Monday and Tuesday, the Lord's Day.
Mm-hmm. Days.
Days.
It's a long days.
Tuesday is the Duke's Day. That's right. Where we learn from in Shropshire. But you can get a classic burger any day of the week except for those 2 days. For $13.25, and you could get a Chipotle Black Bean Burger Club, which is a grilled Chipotle black bean patty. And of course, you know, us English folks eat nothing but beans.
Right.
And you could get that with lettuce, tomato, cucumber, red onion, pepper jack cheese, and skewered on wheat berry bread, served with avocado ranch.
Wheat berry bread?
That's what it says on the card.
Wow. Yeah, I would eat that.
Sounds quite scrumptious.
Yeah, I would eat that. All right, cool.
Yeah.
And is J-Tim's, what are they doing? Takeout, curbside?
So they are doing takeout and curbside pickup, still available. And the hours are on jtimothys.com. Go in the mid-afternoon, you're fine. And then there are other hours as well.
Thank you for the description of time. All right. Well, we're happy to see J-Tim's is back up and running. I'm going to go this week, I think, and fill my entire body with chicken. As much as I can fit into me is going in. So keep that image in your mind, David.
Thank you.
It's nice to see you back as well. I hope you survive the remaining years of this crisis.
Me as well. And I hope everyone is excited about the big return that's happening in early July. And of course, I'm talking about the England cricket team, which plays the West Indies beginning on Thursday. And of course, you know the England cricket team, most famous for Ben Stokes, or as we call him in England, Cardiac Stokes.
What?
He's a clutch player.
Oh, is he related to Kia Stokes? Say yes.
Yes.
Cool. David, thank you for joining us today. And thank you, as always, to the fine folks at J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut. All right, somebody catch me up, although I did see most of this. But can somebody list the sports that got cut recently? Is that where you were going, Peter? Or were you going to segue somewhere else?
I was going to say that Randy Edsel should be in jail.
No.
I mean, I'm open to the argument.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to poo-poo that right away.
Well, he blocked me on Twitter, for one thing.
Well...
That's a good start.
A misdemeanor, but
a felony in 4 states.
Right.
Yeah, so, men's tennis, men's cross country, men's swimming, and women's rowing. That's the answer to your question.
Yes. That will save roughly like $85.
Talk to me about it, Meech. Do you think it's bullshit?
I mean, all college sports accounting is bullshit. I mean, you saw that they changed the way they account for the scholarships, and that saved, quote unquote, something like $5 million a year. Like, it's all bullshit.
Which is definitely more than they're saving
by cutting
cross country.
Yes. Well, the other thing is the sports that they're cutting are not their partial scholarship sports. So like a cross country team might have 50 kids running and there's a total of like 10 scholarships or whatever it is. So you're getting 40 students who are paying normal tuition or the equivalent of that. And that's revenue that you're now losing by cutting this team that you may replace, you may not. Like you're not saving that much money by cutting these sports, but it's all a shell game. So it was a PR move because they can say, look, we're doing something. And it's unfortunate for the athletes in the situation, but and I guess it makes the balance sheet look a little bit better, but it doesn't. I don't think it moves the needle that much.
What would you say, Kevin Meacham, to the folks who say if UConn really wants to address its athletics budget shortfall, they should eliminate football?
They would be right. conditionally, because there's a lot. Obviously, there's a lot more potential with football revenue than there is with cross country. So you're eliminating the possibility that UConn football gets good or gets, you know, back to selling 30,000 tickets for games. And you're bringing in that money, which is a huge boost to your athletic department and probably the biggest boost you can do at this point. The chances of that happening
This is the problem, though, right? Like, we have no idea what it actually takes to break even.
Right.
Well, there's, like, the other things that they talked about. Like, you've got, yeah, you lose some of the red, but you also lose some of the black, too. You're losing all of the buy game money. You're losing all of the TV money. You're losing that Nike contract is not going to be the same without football. Your IMG contract is not going to be the same without football. Like, it's not, none of these numbers are simple. And, like, you look at the budget shortfall and you talk about the fact that, like, you can't please rent to play at state-owned facilities. Then the state turns around and gives money back to UConn. Like, it's all bullshit. It's all bullshit.
It kind of feels like when they leaked, or when that $40 million number came out, it was almost like a political move that then backfired once they realized that there was no more money left in the world because the world died. And so they had to do something to make it look like they were addressing it.
Yeah. To that end, too, like, it kind of read to me, too, like, UConn has been just putting these massive subsidies into sports for the last few years as a way to sort of tread water in the hopes of conference realignment. And then once they finally had to pull the trigger on the Big East move, like, it did feel like this was a very convenient way to, in their mind, kind of right size the athletic department, like, that the decisions of what sports they want to offer, the level of whatever it is, from staffing to scholarships to everything else, like, that was figured out as part of the Big East move. You know, this is how the dominoes kind of fell with the economic situation related to COVID, that it just made it more palatable to cut things at this point. But it was always going to happen. There was always going to be a rebalance because they're now settling into a new reality that is no longer aiming at some sort of higher P5 conference invite, which was always going to happen. You know, we've talked about it for almost a fucking decade now. Like, it was always going to happen. They were always going to run out of options. It was just a matter of how the accounting worked out. And so that's my pet theory on it, at least.
I think that's right. And I, to kind of contradict myself briefly, you know, we were offering 24 sports on a, you know, revenue stream where we're not getting $30 million a year for our TV, and we're not selling out our football stadium, and we're not, you know, making millions of dollars on licensing like a Notre Dame would. You know, while we weren't losing $40 million, we also were spending more than we were making, and probably at an unsustainable level. And this brings us a little bit closer to being more in line with other schools in our position.
My point would be, even if the cost of the athletics goes down, does that decrease the cost of attendance for students, or do they just take student fee money and turn it into something else? Like, they're charging the kids what they can charge them. They're not saying, well, we would normally be charging this, but because football is losing money, every kid's going to have to pay an extra $75 a year or whatever. Or are we just taking $75 from what each kid's paying and pretending it's going to cover the football shortfall?
I mean, you talk too about the money that's, like, coming back from the state, like, the money that's going, like, it's all fungible. Like, none of it means anything.
It's all fungible.
It is.
It's like saying fungible, yeah, too. I got jealous that you got to say fungible.
So this Tulsa game was January the 18th, 2018, and I actually got it reversed. So UConn actually led by 15 after the first quarter, but they played even the rest of the game. And that's why Gino was so upset.
So it wasn't close to any point.
So what the fuck?
No, but they played like crap.
Well, that was worth, I think, the hour cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm. Everybody, thank you for listening to the first ever episode of the A Dime Back podcast. Until next time, we'll see you next February.
Oh, so actually, UConn outscored them by two.